You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across North America, this is the Spurs Insider brought to you by Taco Palenque. I'm Mike Finger from the Express News, joined as always by Spurs beat writer Jeff McDonald and sports editor Nick Talbot. Tom Orsborn was traveling during the eclipse. We have not seen him since. So he's going to be without, we're going to be without him this week. We're assuming he's going to turn up in Oklahoma City, hoping that's the case. We'll soldier on without him, much like the local Cagers have been soldiering on without half their roster, Jeff, but they continue to look like a capable, competent, effective, often entertaining NBA basketball team.
Wait, are we just glossing over Tom Orsborn's disappearance during the eclipse?
I mean, that happens. Whenever the moon goes in front of the sun, sometimes you lose people for a while. We're just assuming he's going to come back.
You think he got raptured or something?
Maybe. I mean, we'll have to wait and see what he's supposed to be at the Oklahoma City game.
I did not get raptured. I'm still here. I guess that's not a surprise.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was a fair trade.
The boss chimes in. Secretly wishing that it would have been Jeff that had been lost rather than Tom. The Spurs, instead of Jeremy Sochan and Devin Vassell and Charles Bassey and Jetty Osman, and am I missing anybody? Keldon Johnson. They got like Sandro Mamukelashvili and who else? Trey Jones is still around. They're competing every night.
They're really overcoming the loss of Dominic Barlow. He left him out as well. They're competing every night. And I don't know. Some of that, do we just attribute that to April basketball in the NBA? Like that sort of thing happens. Like they played really well with this similar group last year down the stretch too. So it's good for them, but are you asking me, is it a harbinger? Is this a harbinger of things to come? I don't know.
I just asked what you made of it. I think you mentioned off the air a couple of days ago that a theory that you had about how the Spurs are a franchise that historically has been all about peaking in March and April and building towards the end of a season, which made sense whenever you're competing for titles, but they still sort of have done that during the lottery era, right?
They have. And maybe I was talking out of my rear end when I made that assertion. I don't have any like way to prove that or any way to, you know, any analytics to that, except for the eye test and the fact that they sure do seem to win games in April, even when they're not very good. You know, they played 500 ball in April last year too. They've have a way of building and getting the most out of themselves down the stretch of a season, whether it matters or not. But they've going into that Philadelphia game, which they lost in double overtime, they were 5-5 over their previous 10 games. Like they were playing 500 basketball in a season when the rest of the season was not even close to 500 basketball. So we've seen them figure some things out, play the right way. Lots of ball sharing. They're going to set a franchise record for assists again. So you know, there's some things to keep an eye on, and maybe you go into the off season with a little bit of a nice taste in your mouth, gives you something to work on, build from. So it's been a good couple weeks for them, and they got a week to go to finish it out and try to not finish as the absolute worst team in franchise history.
One of the many, I guess, frustrations of chronicling the exploits of a team like this is every bit of positivity comes with a bit of an asterisk. Like you mentioned there in passing the assist record. Right. And it really is remarkable. Like they share the ball like few teams in the league share the ball. And they're good. Like you said, they're going to set a record for the most ever. And I think that's not that old of a record. They
do it every year almost. Yeah.
They do it every year. And they're going to end up also challenging for the worst record in the history of the Spurs. And I just wonder, it would take more research than the members of this podcast do for claims like this. But like, is setting a new assist record every year necessarily a good thing? Or does that mean that you don't have the ball dominant star type players that tend to win in the NBA? You know what I mean? Like, they don't have anybody that they just throw the ball to and just take over. They're reliant on moving the ball to score baskets.
I mean, that's exactly how you explain the correlation there. Like, maybe having a whole bunch of assists, like it's good to a point, but having just a whole bunch of assists maybe doesn't lead to winning, because right. it points to what you just said. They do have Victor Wembanyama, though. Like, eventually that right. would be the guy that you would do that to, I guess. But
he's going to score on a lot of lobs, though.
So yeah,
exactly. Assists still come. And it is counterintuitive, because passing is a good thing. Assists are a good thing. Like, that's good basketball. I think just we watched a lot of games from October to February and March where the Spurs shared the basketball really well for 36, 40, 44 minutes. And then at the end, they did not have the guy that can just go get a basket on his own to close these games out. And that's what killed him. And I think there probably is some degree of correlation there, in that if you're too reliant on moving the ball and sharing the ball and being unselfish, like, it's going to hurt you when you need some selfishness down the stretch. And I think that'll come in the years to come. Like you said, Victor Wembanyama will go get you a bucket at some point. This does transition into something else that I wanted to talk about this week, though. And it might sound overly harsh. I've brought this up off the podcast a few times over the past week. But let me pose this to the smaller panel this week. If the Spurs had played all 82 games this season without Jeremy Sochan, without Devin Vassell, without Keldon Johnson, what would their record be right now?
My answer has always been probably right about here. Maybe a little better, maybe a little worse, but probably right in the same.
Probably not better. Probably not better.
Probably not. Well, probably not better.
No.
It also wouldn't surprise me. I mean, like, it's not hard to be better than 19 wins.
Yeah. And this is, again, this is a harsh question. But because clearly Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan and Keldon Johnson are good NBA players. And a couple of them are lottery picks. And they have a future in this league. They have a future with the Spurs. But the kind of just brutal point here is that I'm not sure it would have made that much of a difference just because they weren't winning. And like this team, the Mamu, Trey Jones, who else has played more, like Malachi Branham, Blake Wesley supporting cast, the results of that supporting cast probably wouldn't be that different. What do you make of that? I'm not trying to make any kind of overly critical commentary about those lottery pick guys, but just what do you make of that?
I don't know what to make of that, because I'm not going to sit here and say the Spurs' future is better if they don't have Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan and Keldon Johnson. Like that just seems asinine to say.
It is asinine, and I admit that.
Well, if one thing is, they would have
first step is admitting
Jeremy Sochan at point guard for 34 games and started 5-29.
Yeah, so, that was the mistake.
That was, they're only in 10 and 30 cents, but that's better than 5-29 by margin, you know, marginally better anyway. So you have that experiment if they're not there, if they wouldn't have had them.
I guess the reason I bring this up is just like we're getting to that point in the season where we're starting to reflect on what we've learned. And the question that this poses is, like, are we sure that the supporting cast around Victor has any kind of difference makers? And what I'm saying, my reason for bringing this up isn't to say that those guys are bad players. It's just, are they difference makers? Are they ever going to be difference makers?
Well, I mean, I think we've agreed all along they need to upgrade the supporting cast, whatever that means, adding to, or, you know, if you have to trade those guys to upgrade, do that. I mean, we said all along, I don't know that Devin Vassell is your number two guy on a contending team. He's maybe your number three or number four. So they do need like a true number two somewhere in there behind Victor, and how you get that. You either trade somebody for him or find him in the draft, or you're probably not going to sign them in free agency. I don't think that's the way this works. But so when you say difference makers, I mean, they've got guys that definitely have a role on a team that contends. It's just not the role they played this year, were forced to play this year because that's what the roster was.
That's fair.
But they've already given Devin quite a bit of money.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys. So
and Keldon.
Keldon's deal looks a little bit better now just because the NBA's.
But both of those contracts are tradable if somebody wants them, you know, for a star as part of a package for some sort of star.
And Jeremy Sochan is going to get extended whenever he's extension eligible.
Yes.
Like that's just the way this works.
Yeah.
I there's no overarching the problem with podcasting about a 19 and 60 team or whatever it is there's no eureka moments here. They kind of are what they are. And my point of asking that question is just to sort of note that, I don't know what, that this was going to be bad no matter what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you play those guys, you hope to learn something from them. I'm not sure. I don't think that anything that we learned this season outside of just how spectacularly, preposterously, absurdly amazing Victor Wembanyama is, I don't think anything else that we learned this season surprised us in any way. It's not like, oh, Devin Vassell has this that we didn't think right. he had. Jeremy Sochan has this that we didn't think he had. Keldon Johnson has this that we didn't think he had. I think all those guys are who we thought they were. And, there's no eureka moment. It's just they need help from people who aren't in the organization right now. Those guys can play their roles, but I don't think that they are. Nobody's surpassed expectations in a major way this year. I don't think.
I think that's fair too. I think Devin had a really good year, and I think the Spurs saw from him at least he cleared a bar. Like they saw what they needed to from him. He did take a step forward as a go-to scorer or as a shot maker.
Look at you, like that's a positive thing. You're playing the positive role with Tom out I'm the negative guy this week. It's not that Devin surpassed expectations, is that he met them,
which is
met them, and that's a positive thing.
Yes. It's better than not meeting them.
Yeah. Okay. Like, You convinced me.
He hadn't really had this role before for an entire season. And I guess his season ended a couple weeks short because of injury again. But, he proved he could be pretty consistent. You saw a couple of clunkers in there, but that's going to happen when you're talking about a 22, 23 year old. Overall, he showed he can make shots and make tough shots in this league. And how I think the question going forward, and the Spurs kind of got to this towards the end, right before Devin got hurt, is how can Devin Vassell and Victor operate together? And that two man game looked a lot better, you know, in March than it did in November and December. Yeah. Like that's one of the things that really came along and probably needs to continue to come along if Devin's going to be a central piece of this thing going forward, which it appears he's going to be.
Yeah.
You know who surpassed expectations for me? Victor Wembanyama, which is hard to say, but
that's probably
just
true.
There's just little parts of his game that he does better than I anticipated, especially at this point in the season. We talked about like how the team is, you know, playing better, but Victor's playing better now, a lot better now than he was those first couple of months. And I mean, you look at just those last three games, 15 rebounds a game, you know, 24 points. But the big one for me is, you know, assists. He's had 6, 9, and 8 in his last three games. So, and even before that, 5, 7, 6, you go down the list, but he's really developed as a passer. We talked about those assist numbers, but if he's going to be what he is plus Jokic, that's even wilder than I thought he would be. Because if we thought he'd be a great shot blocker, we thought he'd still have a decent 3-point shot to be able to extend the floor, even at, you know, 7'4". You know, we thought he'd be an inside presence that's impossible to stop, but I didn't think he'd be this good of a passer already.
He plays really well with Mamu.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Mamu minutes.
It is fun.
To sound like our listeners, we're usually the misers who are telling guys, well, you can't play those guys because they don't play defense. You can't play. Who go through the brief history of bench guys that the shut-ins wanted to see more of over the years. There's a litany of them. Mamu was always one of them. Play Mamu more. I'm sort of on their side on this. He's fun to watch. And he and Victor play well together. And those assists that Nick was talking about, a lot of them go to cutting Sandro Mamu Kalashvili. It's enjoyable. I don't care that he can't guard anybody. He tries to guard people.
Is Victor the best passer on the team already?
Probably. Probably. He's really something else. And to Nick's point about how he's gotten better, his bad games, which he still has, the Victor Wembanyama bad games are still just, they're near triple doubles. He's all over the place. There was one against Denver at Denver a week or so ago. And I was reading something online about it. A guy wrote about it in Defector, and it, just about how Victor Wembanyama is going to ruin his life because he watched that. He's an NBA fan, non-Spurs fan. Watched that Nuggets game in which Victor Wembanyama did nothing really notable for Victor Wembanyama. And you could just see sometimes you need fresh eyes. We watched 80 Victor Wembanyama games this year, and we sort of take for granted some of this stuff. But fresh eyes come in and watch it, and are like, this guy is going to dominate the whole dang league in a year and a half. He didn't even do any. He had a bad shooting night against Denver, and still the Spurs with Victor, I don't think had much help that night either. There were some guys out, and they nearly beat the defending champs in Denver on a night when he wasn't making his shots. It's incredible.
That stat line: 9 of 29 from the field, 2 of 11 from three, but he finished at 23 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, and 9 blocks.
That was at Denver that night, and the Spurs lost by what, 5, something like that. Yep.
And the Spurs lost by 5. So shot terribly. 9 of 29 is terrible and 2 of 11 terrible. But that stat line is still incredible.
That's the thing with him.
That was a bad night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's the blocks. Like, even when he's having a bad offensive night, he's just a menace on like a menace. Like, yeah. We've never seen anything like this kind of menace on defense. So even when he's having a bad offensive night, he's still helping you out in a big time way on the other end of the floor. And we've talked about his blocks and his near blocks and the U-turns people make driving in there against him ad nauseum on this thing. But that's a huge part of his game that it gives you a baseline where he's going to be a productive player every night he's on the floor, even when the shots ball's not going in for him. And there aren't a lot of players in the league you can say that about.
Yep. Yep. That's definitely true. Would to be able to.
Like Steph goes 9 of 29. That's a disaster. For the Warriors, no?
Yep. Yep. He's all, yep. I'm not sure what this, sometimes with Victor Wembanyama, you just say, yep. What else is there to say?
You're channeling Tom Thibodeau's pregame when the Knicks were here. The answer to every question to Tom Thibodeau was just, yep. Yep. It's very Pop-like.
I mean, he's legitimately going to average 4.5 to 5 blocks a game, but
yeah.
By the time he's, you know, mid-career.
Philadelphia the other night? We were commenting during the first or second overtime about his stat line, and what Victor had over 30 points, I think, way up there in rebounds and assists. And I think it was early in the first overtime, really late in the game. Somebody said, well, he hasn't had many blocks tonight. And by the end of it, didn't he have 7?
7, yeah.
He might have taken a 7th away from him. But he just gets them. Like the blocks are inevitable in a way that the points aren't.
Right.
That's what I was saying earlier. Yeah. Like the every basketball coach from middle school to the NBA always talks about how the defense has to travel. Like the defense will travel even if your shooting doesn't. And that's definitely true of Wembanyama's game. Like that side of it, there's never going to be an off defensive night. It doesn't seem like.
And
teams, what a luxury that is.
And teams know that, like opponents know that, and they still end up giving up 7 blocks.
Yeah.
That was the first thing, Nick, you know, before the game, when people were asking Nick Nurse about Wimby and preparing for Wimby and what he's seen from Wimby over the course of the season. Cause they had played the Spurs in January the first time. So over the last few months, how he's grown. And the two things Nurse mentioned were the passing that we've talked about, and just like defensively you have to basically reconfigure offense to where you're not going to give up 100 blocks. Like you have to actually go in and change what you're doing, because that dude's in the middle of the Spurs defense, and they do that and they talk about that, and he still gets 7, you know. Like it's crazy.
That's what I've said before on this podcast. Like the reason people keep challenging Victor is because it's so unusual for these guys to have to worry about challenging guys. Like these are the elite athletes of the world, the best basketball players that we have, and they're not used to backing down from people. You know, the 29 other teams that they play in the league don't have that guy where they have to think, hey, this drive that works every other night of the year is not going to work tonight. So as much as like a Nick Nurse harps on that in pregame, you get into the game itself and the players are to change for one guy just seems dramatic, and some guys can't do it.
Well, that's all going to change next year when Zach Edey gets into the league.
Yeah.
Becomes the next Victor.
I don't think that's going to happen. Hey, who's your favorite? You've mentioned Tom Thibodeau. You've mentioned Nick Nurse. Who's your favorite pregame coach in the league?
Oh, come on. It's easy.
Who's that?
That's got to be Steve Kerr, right?
Oh, yeah. That's slam dunk. Is there a close second?
Close second. Who's been delightful lately? I don't know. They all run together. You don't have a lot of Phil Jacksons anymore. That's sort of celebrity coaches that you want to listen to.
That's true.
It's not the same league.
Kind of nameless, faceless. You got your Will Hardys.
Will Hardy. There you go.
Reunite with Will Hardy.
There you go. There's my close second. I love talking to Will because he's very insightful. He's not, you know, some of these coaches don't want to tell you anything about anything, and he's not that. You know, he doesn't give away state secrets or whatever, but he'll give you insight, and he's funny and just an affable guy. Will would be my close second. Thanks for reminding me.
There you go. We have 4 games. Well, when this podcast reaches the listeners' digital ears, there will be 3 left, I guess, because we're recording this while you are in Memphis, Tennessee. You made it to Memphis, Tennessee during the eclipse, right?
I did. I've actually saw 0 of the eclipse because I was flying out of the way, I guess, the whole time. And then I landed and there was no eclipse here by the time I landed at 4 yesterday afternoon. What was weird, like there was no eclipse here when I landed at 4, but like around 8 o'clock, there was another one. like the sun went away and it got dark, and it stayed dark for like a long time. Like, it's a much better eclipse than you guys got.
It's the dad jokes on this podcast never stop. It's been a while on this podcast since dad I've jokes. Hyped.
Dad jokes never stop. See that I've t-shirt, hyped, I think.
Since I've hyped expressnews.com, where over the next week or so, we're gonna have some retrospectives on this season to remember. from Jeff McDonald and Tom Orsborn. We just got three more after Memphis. You can get it on expressnews.com, the dead tree edition of the Express News. We got subscriptions available there. We still have the Spurs Nation newsletter going on all offseason long, where we'll get into the lottery and the combine and the summer league and the draft, free agency, the Olympics, Victor Wembanyama going to the Olympics this summer in Paris, France, all kinds of stuff for you to get at the Express News. We've talked all month, I guess, for the last month or so, about the Spurs avoiding the undistinguished history of the worst record in franchise history. There's a chance they will, Jeff. Do you think that they will? And by avoiding it, I mean they need to get to 21. 20 ties it, and that's not good enough.
You know, it would have been nice if they had pulled out that Philadelphia game. They would have a pretty good shot at matching last year's win total, which would be a nice goal to have as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're going to have that opportunity now.
The key one will be history by the time the listeners hear this, because they're playing Tuesday night at Memphis. And I think that's the one that decides all of this. Because if they get that one Tuesday night, they're 20. You probably finish with the win against Detroit. And then the other two
I guess we don't want to talk too much about that game, since it'll be old news by the time this hits people's ears. But the Spurs haven't beat Memphis in a long time.
Yeah.
But the Grizzlies have 11 guys out.
Yeah.
For this game that's going to happen tonight. 11. Like, you have to play five. Like, who's left even? Like, this is probably going to really come back to haunt me.
Do you have to play? Is Norman Dale the coach at Memphis? Like, Norman Dale doesn't have to play five. His team's on the floor. That's another really current reference for the listeners out there. But go ahead.
Anyway, the Spurs have no business losing this game tonight against. So I know that statement's going to come back to haunt me, but they really have no business. Like, it's a bad, bad loss if they lose to Memphis with 11 guys out. Like, Memphis is actively trying to lose at this point. So if you lose to the team that's trying to lose, that's rough. And they close.
I will say that's sort of unfair.
Come on.
Because the Grizzlies aren't as we've covered.
Oh, I know what you mean.
We've covered these teams before in recent years with the Spurs. The players and the coaches are never trying to lose. The organization is.
But of course, that's what I meant. Players
and coaches are going to try.
Yeah, the six of them that are available.
You said actively trying to lose, which I think is a bit of unfair characterization.
Well, we're quibbling over who is trying to lose.
Yeah.
Who in the organization? But the results is the same. There's 11 guys out. Yeah. 11. Like, you can't lose to that team. And then you close the Spurs close the season with Detroit, who is also actively trying to lose.
Again, I quibble with that.
So those are two that you think you can get. If you don't, you're having to steal one against Denver or OKC, which I wouldn't really. You know, Denver might be sitting people in that game. I don't know. But I wouldn't pin my hopes on those. Like, get your two against the teams that are actively trying to lose and avoid that record.
We'll do our weekly lottery odds discussion here. Speaking of teams who are actively trying to lose, which the Spurs, and on the other teams' podcasts and other cities, they might be saying that the Spurs are actively trying to lose.
Well, they're clearly not. They won five of their last 10. Or whatever.
Well, so have the Grizzlies have won four of their last 10. The Washington Wizards have won four of their last 10. These teams are trying, man. Anyway, the Spurs currently tied with Charlotte for the third worst record in the league. And that distinction could there's statistical differences between being third. There's no statistical difference between being third and second worst. Those teams have the same lottery odds. But third and fourth, there's a bit of a difference. Third has a better chance to get the top pick than the fourth team does. But that looks like that where they're going to finish, either third or fourth. They've got a two-game cushion below Portland, the Spurs do, who look like the fifth worst team. And then Memphis and Toronto are well above that. So that's where we are.
Toronto's won two in a row. That kind of helps as far as lottery odds go.
It does, but I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to catch Memphis. Like I think Toronto's probably going to settle right in there with the sixth worst record. And if that's the case, then it's a coin flip in the lottery whether the Spurs get that pick or not. Because I think it's like 45% they stay in the top six, 50 something percent that they get the seventh pick or worse, and that's the case where the Spurs would get it. But that'll be something to talk about in our postseason editions of the Spurs Insider. And this is the last one that we're going to be doing before the season ends. So this is our last regular season edition of the 2023-24 Spurs Insider regular season podcast. It just flew by, didn't it, Jeff?
And Tom Orsborn got raptured right before it.
Yeah, he'll be back to provide, we hope he'll be back to provide his tales of the eclipse, his view, his thoughts on the season as a whole. And we look forward to that next week. Look forward to all that. We will see you then. Anything you want to add before we go?
No, I'm good. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure working with you. Great podcast.
Hope that, well, you know, this might be the last one we do together. The offseason, as everyone in the NBA knows, you take nothing for granted that you're going to play with your teammates again. Like, it's a business, right, Nick? Yeah, this is a business. You got to make business decisions. And there's no guarantee that we're going
to
bring
Jeff
back.
I think the quote you're going to hear, you have to start it with, at the end of the day, it's a business.
At the end of the day, it's a business.
Yeah, we're going to hear that quote a lot in the next few weeks, I think.
They call this show business, not show friends. If we can get something for Jeff, Nick, I think it's something we need to explore. Like, I think he's a solid number three. Like, he's proven, he's cleared that bar. Jeff's a solid three. But can't if we can get a good a clear cut two for him?
You're gonna trade me for
on the trade market.
Trade me for Brian Windhorst and a draft pick.
Like that's dreaming away. I'm not sure you'll ever fetch a Brian Windhorst. God, if we could get like a Michael C. Wright. Michael C. Wright, like if we could get him. Nick, you need to start exploring that on the down low. Just floating Jeff's name out there, seeing what we could get. Like I'll miss him, I guess. But I don't know.
You're a locker room cancer.
I just at my competitive window, I sense it narrowing. I sense it shutting. I want to make the most of it. And if that means I got to alienate everyone else in the locker room, so be it. I want to get my rings. But if you're back in the offseason, great. Well, I'll work with you. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm just telling Nick.
Well, I'm not.
Make those calls. Make those calls, Nick. See what we can get. Check his trade value. And if we got to keep him, we'll keep him.
Is there anyone at like the Honolulu, Hawaii paper that you'd want to trade me for? Because I would be on board with that.
There's no NBA team there. So you want to cover the rainbows.
He'll cover high school.
Warriors now, right?
Surfing. I'll cover surfing.
All right. Well, look into that. Maybe we'll see Jeff. We'll definitely see Tom next week. Tom's untradeable. Nick will be back next week. I'll be back next week. If we can't get anything for Jeff, I suppose he'll be back too. Until then, take care of each other and keep it real.